from ABC News, World News This Week. I'm Dorothy McIntyre, ABC News. Listen.
I think most people would say he's rather liberal in terms of civil rights, people's rights, and access to the court system.
We had about 50 to 70 people on the beach. We had a lot more people in the water. Obviously, the plan was for them to get close enough to shore for these people to be able to swim ashore.
The court order ruled that the camp should be shut down in 10 days.
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's world news.
Are you off the phone yet?
Yeah, Mom, I'm off the phone.
The greatest lesson you can learn about education is that it shouldn't stop after school.
I don't believe this.
What?
Mom, it's 9 o'clock. Don't you ever get your head out of those books?
Look, I'm doing homework like you should be.
I already did it. Listen, I thought the whole reason to get out of school is so you'll never have to do homework again.
I could look at it that way, but then I'd be stuck in the same job all my life, doing the same thing. That's not what I want.
And what do you want?
Something better.
If you think homework is just for kids, you should see what it can do for your career. So keep learning, go back to school, get training, improve your job skills, and you'll find a whole new future waiting for you. It's as simple as ABC. Never stop learning. A message from Project Learning US, the ABC Radio Networks, and this station.
Stephen Breyer had a most important lunch date on Friday. The Federal Appeals Court judge from Boston dined on consommé and crab cakes at the White House. But the main course was the discussion he had with President Clinton about his possible nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court to replace the retiring Byron White. Breyer is said to be the leading choice for the job. Harvard Law professor Arthur Miller has known Judge Breyer for 25 years.
He's not a person of extremes. He generally takes a very commonsensical view of the cases. I think most people would say he's rather liberal in terms of civil rights, people's rights, and access to the court system.
The Senate must confirm Supreme Court nominees. And while Breyer is more liberal than Justice White, he is very popular among conservatives on the Senate Judiciary Committee, such as Utah's Orrin Hatch.
He's certainly a person of high quality, high ethics, and high moral values, and just the type of person I think anybody would want on the Supreme Court. And if he's chosen, I think he would have an excellent chance of getting through.
Senate Minority Leader Bob Dole thinks Judge Breyer is so acceptable that if he is nominated, he will be confirmed before Congress goes on its August recess. The Supreme Court issued several decisions during the week. One struck down a municipal law in Hialeah, Florida, against the sacrifice of animals, a practice of followers of the Santeria religion. The practitioners say the sacrifices are an indispensable part of their faith. Roger Karras, the head of the ASPCA, is among those who think the killings are barbaric.
The slow bleeding to death of animals on an altar, dripping blood on each other, is not modern America. It's not our concept of what is appropriate and legal behavior.
Harvard Law professor Lawrence Tribe thinks Karras is missing the point.
This law was a problem not because animals were involved, but because the law singled out religious ceremonies and said that if you slaughter an animal in a religious ceremony, then you violate the ordinances. But if you just drown a kitten for the hell of it, you don't violate these ordinances.
The High Court also issued another ruling involving religion. This one said a public school in Center Moriches, New York, could not deny after-hours use of its facilities to a church group while allowing non-religious groups those same privileges if both groups were conducting the same activity. In this case, showing a movie. Alan Snap belongs to the local church, Lamb's Chapel.
I hope that they'll accept the judgment. I hope that they'll, you know, open their doors and realize that, you know, that's a responsibility they have. I hope that it's not a begrudging thing. Certainly there's no hostility on this end, and we don't want any kind of friction between a relationship at all.
In yet another decision, the Supreme Court ruled that states can adopt harsher penalties for those who commit so-called hate crimes motivated by bigotry. In Seattle, a former insurance salesman was sentenced in a 1991 product tampering case. Joseph Meeling was convicted of trying to kill his wife for $700,000 in life insurance money by putting cyanide in her Sudafed capsules. He poisoned several other packages in stores to divert attention from himself. His wife survived, but two other people died. There was a nationwide recall of Sudafed at the time, and Mehling has been ordered to pay a stiff fine to the makers of Sudafed. Paul Whelan represented the widow of one of the victims.
Life in prison and $3.5 million in restitution is a sentence that we're pleased with. That was the maximum. We asked for the maximum.
Mehling maintains his innocence, saying he, too, is a victim.
Well, of course, I'm remorseless. I haven't done anything to be remorseful for. You know, I sympathize with the families of the other victims.
Mehling's life sentence carries no possibility of parole. Yet another chapter in the widely publicized child custody case involving Woody Allen and Mia Farrow. Calling the filmmaker a self-absorbed, untrustworthy, and insensitive father, a judge in New York City granted custody of the couple's three children to their mother, who told reporters,
"My hope now is that I can go home, back to my children, and that we will finally have some measure of peace and be allowed to heal to begin that. It'll be a long road before we'll wake up to a really normal day."
Woody Allen was granted limited visitation rights with his 5-year-old son, but cannot see his 7-year-old daughter until she undergoes therapy. Farrow had accused Allen of molesting her. A team of experts concluded that no molestation was involved. The business of smuggling illegal aliens into the U.S. has run aground, literally. A tramp steamer named the Golden Venture and its cargo of nearly 300 Chinese got hung up on a sandbar off New York's Rockaway Peninsula. The passengers panicked and started jumping overboard. Peter Cozzolino was one of the first rescuers to reach them.
We had about 50 to 70 people on the beach. We had a lot more people in the water. Obviously, the plan was for them to get close enough to shore, for these people to be able to swim ashore. They all had watertight bundles with them. And I guess they didn't realize that once they got in the water, the waves were going to start throwing them around. And we wound up pulling several people out of the water and then either bringing them into shore or out to the police launches in the bay.
About a half dozen of the illegals died and several others were injured. David Cao, an interpreter with the New York City Police, spoke with some of the survivors. They told about their journey, which began months ago in China.
They were put into the cargo hold and a lot of them never came back out again. They knew they stopped and they evidently did not come out and see where they were. So they said they knew that a lot of stops were made, but they couldn't give me the name of the ports that they stopped at. But every stop they made, people came on board.
William Slattery of the Immigration Service says the passengers had a common story to tell.
Most of them claim that they want more than one child, and they're concerned about forced sterilization in China. That's the statements they give us.
And on that basis, they asked for asylum, which automatically lets them stay in this country pending a hearing. It's that law which annoys New York Democratic Congressman Charles Schumer.
Our laws are a mess. And the word is out around the world that you can easily violate them, that once you're here and you claim asylum, you're here pretty much for good.
Four of the women aboard the steamer have already been released. The crew of the Golden Venture has been charged with smuggling. Police are looking for an illegal alien whom they say runs a gang in the U.S., whose business it is to run such smuggling operations. The fate of 158 Haitians infected with the virus that causes AIDS has been resolved. A judge has ordered them released from the U.S. Naval Base at Guantanamo, Cuba, and sent anywhere but back to Haiti. The judge called their incarceration by the Bush and Clinton administrations outrageous, callous, and reprehensible. There's no argument about their future from the Pentagon's Bob Hall.
The court order ruled that the camp should be shut down in 10 days. And from what I've heard from the White House, the intention is that the administration will not seek a stay. And they are, you know, now looking at the issue of where to bring the people from Guantanamo Bay, that they'll be paroled and brought here to the U.S.
A new law signed by President Clinton prevents persons with the AIDS virus from emigrating to this country, although it has no bearing on the status of the Haitians. Mr. Clinton didn't like that provision, but signed the bill since it also lifts the long-time ban on fetal tissue research.
This legislation provides the hope that someday we can prevent or cure diseases such as diabetes, cancer, coronary heart disease, AIDS, and Alzheimer's.
The bill was signed as a major world conference on AIDS was taking place in Berlin. Among the speakers was U.S. Surgeon General Antonio Novello, who released a report that included a new focus on the dangers that AIDS poses for women. And for the first time, her report provided explicit instructions on the use of condoms.
AIDS is no longer a disease only of homosexuals, and I think that that is key. Second, that about 12% of all the AIDS cases in the United States are in women and in their reproductive ages when they are conceiving children. And more importantly, that when a woman is infected and she is pregnant, one out of four of her potential children will be infected with the virus.
The conference ended at the end of the week, and its impact is assessed by ABC's George Strait.
This was a return to reality. It was almost like a cold slap in the face. Folks who had thought that there was an awful lot of progress being made against this AIDS epidemic found that while there have been some hopeful signs sometime in the future, don't expect any breakthroughs next year, the year after. There won't be an AIDS vaccine probably even tested on human beings for another 4 or 5 years. And one of the most startling things is that there was a research study done showing that the long-term reliability of AZT, the most widely used drug against AIDS, is being seriously questioned.
A serious question being asked in Washington is what form President Clinton's budget bill will take. Apparently, Mr. Clinton's plan for a so-called BTU tax on energy sources is dead, although some kind of tax on fuel is still being talked about. Many Democrats in the House who didn't like the president's plan but voted for it anyway don't like the way things are going on the Senate side. They say the president has backed away from earlier positions, and as Colorado's Pat Schroeder puts it,
a retreat apparently was signaled without anybody really being aware of the retreat, and there we are doing a tap dance out on the end of the plank as it's being sawed off from underneath us.
Nonsense, says the president.
Well, they didn't walk the plank on the budget for nothing. Their budget is going to be part of the conference. And they are being consulted now, and no decision has been made by the Senate yet. You know, Chairman Moynihan and Senator Mitchell started with the senators who are most hostile to the BTU tax. But they have 11 senators on that committee they have to satisfy, and then they have to get a majority in the body of the Senate. So no decisions have been made yet.
The newest member of the Senate is pretty clear in her mind about what the people want and don't want.
They see this tax and spend philosophy as very bad. And I think that President Clinton is right to be sitting down and talking about negotiating something. And I think people do not want new taxes. They really want to see true budget cuts.
That's Senator-elect Kay Bailey Hutchison. She defeated Democrat Bob Krueger to win the Senate seat in Texas he took over when Lloyd Bentsen became Treasury Secretary. As she gets ready to be sworn in, an investigation has been started in Texas amid accusations that Hutchison misused state funds and her authority as state treasurer to win the Senate race. As for the economy, fears about inflation rearing up were pretty much dampened by May's report on producer prices. They didn't go up at all, a big switch from the fairly large gains in March and April. On the downside, though, the puny 0.1% gain in retail sales. The chief economist at Economic Advisors in Boston, Alan Sinai, says you don't have to look far for the reason.
We continue to have a cautious consumer. Jobs are not that plentiful. Income is growing slowly. I don't think consumers will cut back on spending, but we're going to see the consumer stay hunkered down for many months to come.
Next major figure for Sinai and other analysts to digest, the Consumer Price Index, due out this coming week. Amid the political comings and goings during the week, the election of a new mayor in Los Angeles to replace the retiring Tom Bradley. The new man is Richard Reardon, a conservative Republican who built his campaign on the poor economy and law and order.
I think the major thing that's divided people is the economy. People are fighting over the few jobs that there are, or fewer jobs. And I think if we can make L.A. safe, the business will come back out of their own self-interest.
Los Angeles hasn't had a Republican mayor in 20 years. Tom Bradley isn't the only Democrat leaving office. After 12 years, Maynard Jackson has announced he's retiring as mayor of Atlanta for personal reasons.
I have wrestled with this decision more than any other decision of my life. This has been a gut-wrenching process, but I'm satisfied that I've made the regrettably necessary decision.
Jackson's departure as mayor of Atlanta leaves the race wide open as the city prepares to host the 1996 Summer Olympic Games. U.S. troops are on the move overseas. Secretary of State Warren Christopher announcing at a NATO meeting that 300 ground troops would join the United Nations force in Macedonia as observers. Christopher also persuaded NATO to provide air support to protect UN forces in Bosnia. There's been a flare-up in Somalia where one of the country's chief warlords, General Mohamed Idid, has been flexing his military muscles. Forces loyal to him are blamed for killing 23 Pakistani soldiers who were members of the UN peacekeeping team there. Exactly 1 week after the incident, the UN responded. UN helicopter gunships and heavily armed fixed-winged planes attacked ammunition dumps and other installations controlled by Idid's forces. Army officer Stephen Natt says they encountered no resistance.
There were guards inside this building. I'll show you where they were staying. They left so fast, they left their shoes, their cigarettes, everything else. We didn't have any kind of actual enemy contact here. By the time we were came in again, the attack helicopters had been here, and those guards had beat the heck out of here as fast as they could go.
General Idid was not captured in the assault. Also evading capture, Liberian rebel forces blamed for the slaughter of more than 500 people at a farming camp not far from the capital city of Monrovia. UN officials visited the area and said the carnage was beyond description.
They were shot, they were mutilated, and some of them had their heads broken and their throats cut. But most of them had a lot of bullet wounds. These are all civilians who have been displaced by this war.
It was the worst atrocity in the three-year Liberian Civil War. In this country, health officials continue to try to track down the cause of a mysterious illness that is blamed for the deaths of at least 11 people in and around the Navajo Reservation that spreads across parts of New Mexico, Arizona, and Utah. John McKean of the New Mexico Governor's Office says they are increasingly confident that the cause is linked to rodent droppings.
We're concentrating our efforts on controlling the rodent population, but there is even less likelihood than ever before that this is an illness which can be transmitted from person to person. It appears to be something that people get from rodents.
A 22-year-old Navajo woman died during the week, but health officials are not sure if her death was caused by the mystery illness. On Capitol Hill, a House subcommittee has been hearing testimony about a mysterious illness that has affected many veterans who served in Operation Desert Storm. Among those testifying was Betty Zuspan, who says her husband was very healthy before Desert Storm, but is disabled now. And their medical bills have passed the $100,000 mark.
My husband feels that his country has deserted him. As the wife of a Desert Storm veteran, I am devastated. As an American, I am furious.
There are plenty of theories as to what caused the veterans of Desert Storm to become ill, but so far, no conclusions. Among this past week's obituaries, that of Alexis Smith, the actress who co-starred with some of the leading men of the 1940s and 50s. Alexis Smith starred in more than 30 films, but the high point of her career came in 1971, nearly a decade after her retirement from the screen. Her appearance in the Broadway show Follies won her a Tony as Best Actress in a Musical. Alexis Smith was 72. She'd been fighting cancer. An auto accident in Germany killed Drazen Petrovic. The Croatian basketball player had become a star with the NBA's New Jersey Nets, and had played with the Croatian team, which won the silver medal at the Olympics in Barcelona. Petrovic was 28. He was buried in his native Croatia. The pro basketball playoffs are in their last week, and pro hockey wrapped up the Stanley Cup championship last Wednesday night in Montreal.
5 seconds left. The Montreal Canadiens have won the Stanley Cup.
The Canadiens knocked off the Los Angeles Kings in 5 games to win their 24th championship. Goalie Patrick Roy became the first player in the team's history to win MVP honors twice. He last did it in the 1986 playoffs as a rookie. As As is so often the case these days, overexcited fans use the championship as an excuse to go on a rampage in Montreal, causing all kinds of damage along a 30-block stretch of St. Catherine Street. More than 100 people were arrested, another 150 or so were injured, including 50 police officers. A much quieter end to the men's finals at the French Open in Paris, where Sergi Bruguera of Spain upset the favored Jim Courier of America in 5 sets. A meld of old customs with modern times in Tokyo last Wednesday, as the world's oldest continuous monarchy celebrated a royal wedding. Crown Prince Naruhito was joined in matrimony to a former diplomat, Masako Iwata. ABC's Bill Redeker was there.
There was no fanfare, and it was not very exciting. But there was something reassuring about today's ancient wedding ritual. In this, one of the most technologically advanced countries in the world, it was encouraging to see that Japan still remembers its past. It could have been 1,000 years ago, as the prince, dressed in the style of an 8th century ruler, entered the most sacred shrine at the Imperial Palace. His bride-to-be, Masako Iwata, wore a 9-layer silk kimono. The once ambitious career woman, soon to be addressed as Her Royal Highness, the Crown Princess.
Unlike other weddings involving royalty, much of the one in Japan was private. But there was a motorcade to give the common folk a chance to see the happy couple after the ceremonies. A toast to Broadway when World News This Week continues in a moment.
Imagine if drug abusers said exactly what was on their minds.
Hi, Jim. You got a minute?
Only if it's a quick minute, Steve.
Well, it's the Anderson file. We should talk about it.
No, listen, I'd love to, but I was just about to snort some coke.
Why'd you say snort coke?
That's right, cocaine. You know, blow, nose candy. I do it all day.
Not your typical office conversation, but consider this. 1 in 7 working Americans uses illegal drugs.
But what about the Anderson file?
Tell you what, let me duck into the men's room, do a couple of lines, and I'll be right with you.
Of course, drug abusers aren't this candid about their problem, but sooner or later, their problem speaks for itself.
Okay, got my head cleared. Now, about that Peterson file.
Anderson file, Jim.
What can you do for someone who needs help? Give them this number, 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-HELP. It's the number of the National Drug Abuse Helpline. It's free, it's confidential, and it just may be the help they need. This message brought to you by the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Broadway's version of Hollywood's Oscars were awarded this past week.
A Spider-Woman in her velvet cape.
You're listening to Cheetah Rivera perform part of the score of Kiss of the Spider-Woman, which won Best Musical Honors and a Tony for Best Actress in a Musical for Miss Rivera, and a Tony for Best Actor in a Musical for Brent Carver.
Yes, there is no place like home. I have been kissed by some angels in America, I know. And I'm so grateful for this gift to work with the greats in the American theater.
Carver's mention of being kissed by some angels in America refers to the play Angels in America, The Millennium Approaches, which won a Tony as Best Play and a Best Actor Award for Ron Liebman.
I saw my first Broadway play when I was 3 years old. I've been a professional actor for 35 years. Angels in America is my 10th Broadway play. This is my first Tony nomination. I hope you know in your hearts how deeply grateful I am to be here tonight.
Rounding out the major awards, the one for Best Actress in a Play, which went to Madeline Kahn.
Thank you so much for this recognition of my work. To be named among such fine actresses for work labeled comedy is, I'm sure, a rare privilege.
Madeline Kahn starred in The Sisters Rosenzweig. And those are the people and stories that made world news this week. World News This Week was written and produced by Gil Longin, engineering by Tien Tron. I'm Dorothy McIntyre, ABC News, New York.
More Americans get their news from ABC News than from any other source.